I'm Jim Hodson, and I'd like to welcome you to Introspective. Please join us now for the next 60 minutes as we discuss topics of interest that affect each of our lives. Be prepared to call in with your questions in 30 minutes at 818-762-KKLA. And now, your host for Introspective, Craig Johnson.
Well, good evening and welcome back to Introspective. It's been a week, and how was your week, Jim?
Oh, mine was great. You've been out of the country. No, out of the state.
Is going back east out of the country
well,
for you?
Well, kind of it is, yes.
So how are you tonight?
Good. Missed you, though, this week.
Thank you.
But you've been out doing research and making up new shows.
Yes,
actually.
Doing a book on Kennedy.
And
we, well, I'll tell you a little bit about it. I did some interviews back east, which we're going to be playing in about 3 weeks, so we can look forward to that. Our guest tonight is Aaron Breitbart from the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles. We're going to be discussing Nazi war criminals and the Holocaust. And before we do that, do you have any info to give us?
Well, next week, Johanna Michelson will be on. She is the sister-in-law of Hal Lindsey and has written a book called The Beautiful Side of Evil. Topic will be psychic surgery and the occult, which she has come out of. So that'll be an interesting topic. The new Introspective newsletter will be out in weeks, so now would be a good time to write in and get that or get on the mailing list. The address is Introspective, Box 6555, Malibu, California, 90264-6555. And also later on in the program today, you can call in with your questions. The number for that is 818-762-KKLA. Our producer engineer today is Bill DeFoy. And so if you hear feedback, it's all his fault.
Get your calls ready. Without any further ado, welcome, Aaron.
Thank you very much.
I want to ask you, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, what is it and what is your function there?
The Simon Wiesenthal Center, established in 78, has as its basic purpose public education. We use the lessons of the Holocaust and of other genocides to demonstrate the dangers of bigotry and intolerance in general so that we will get off our apathy. We will not let this happen again, regardless of who the perpetrator or the intended victim is.
When you, first of all, let's go back in time a little bit. First of all, give us a little overview on Simon Wiesenthal and his work and the various books that he has written. And then let's discuss after Nuremberg, after the war, what was the situation with Nazi war criminals and how do they fit into the United States and other places today? Wiesenthal.
Simon Wiesenthal was born some 78 years ago in a little town in southeastern Poland called Buchach. The reason that I know about it is my father was born in a town not very far from that. Simon Wiesenthal had much to look forward to. He had studied architectural engineering. He seemed to have a great future ahead of him, and then all of a sudden came World War II and the Holocaust that soon followed on its heels. Simon Wiesenthal and his wife together lost some 89 members of the family. He survived. His wife did, partially by passing as a non-Jew. After the war, most people, of course, at least those who survived, wanted to rebuild their lives, try to forget to some extent. But Simon Wiesenthal, rather than going back into architecture, decided that he would now pursue the cause of justice. Justice, as he saw it, was to hunt down those people who were guilty of atrocities, not only against Jews, but Poles, Slavs, mankind in general. And because of him, directly and indirectly, some 1,100 Nazi war criminals have been brought before the bar of justice.
And we probably all remember Adolf Eichmann, 1960,
that,
in Israel,
of course,
as the Summa, with reference to the cases. Let's go back to the Nuremberg trials shortly after World War II. What, in your view, was accomplished there with reference to bringing the consciousness of really the world up to the atrocities that had happened? And what has happened since with reference to the trying of Nazi war criminals?
Well, the purpose of the Nuremberg trials was to punish those people who basically orchestrated the Holocaust and World War II. There were several Nuremberg trials. The one that everybody remembers is the very big one. And there were people who were brought up on charges. A few of them were actually acquitted. Most were convicted. And about a dozen were hanged. After the war and after the Nuremberg trials, there were subsequent trials held by the different powers. And there are no war crimes trials in the United States today. However, when there are people who are suspected of war crimes in the United States, it is now the policy of the United States government to get them out of the country, to deport them, and if there is an extradition warrant out for them, to do the same.
Where do we stand today? Actually, before the interview, you had mentioned that the true winners of the Cold War were the Nazis, simply because as soon as we had won the war, our concern was for the Soviet Union, and we more or less let a lot of the big fish, the big Nazi fish, get away, many of them were absorbed into our society to help our country. Give us an overview as to what happened immediately after the war.
Well, according to Alan Ryan, who was a former director of that branch of the U.S. Justice Department, which investigates those war crime suspects, as many as 10,000 may have come into the United States. The great majority of them came through because we simply did not know what their backgrounds were. However, it must also be said that there were some who were able to get special consideration because they had something to sell. Now, as you mentioned, after the war, the Nazis were no longer a threat. The threat were the communists. There were two groups of people whom we were very interested in. Those who had specific scientific knowledge, especially knowledge in rocketry, such as Wernher von Braun, Arthur Rudolph. And then there were those who, as security officers for the Third Reich, had certain information about Communist Party organizations. After World War II, for example, there was a fear that the communists, who were very much involved in the resistance against the Nazis, might actually win the election. And so, therefore, a person like Klaus Barbie, who had been stationed in France, had some information to sell, and a deal could be cut.
Yes. You mentioned to me also before the interview that there are all kinds of splinter groups that you research. You're not just simply dealing with Nazi war criminals at Simon Wiesenthal. You're dealing with the neo-Nazi groups and so on and so forth. You mentioned your concern is to really bring people and their memories back to a little over 40 years ago. How are these new strange splinter groups doing in gaining adherence to the fact that as they believe is a fact that the Holocaust never happened, it was just Jewish propaganda? How many of these groups are you keeping tabs on?
It changes from day to day because sometimes there is one group that has two or three or four different names. It's very important that we do keep very close track of them because it is essentially their goal to create some of the same conditions, or at least take advantage of some of the same conditions that were existing in Germany that would allow the same sort of atrocity to reoccur. Let us understand something. Germany was not a barbaric nation. Germany was one of the most cultured and technologically advanced societies of the time. Germany was a country where one went to be healed. The greatest doctors were German doctors, were Viennese doctors. Germany was the country of Beethoven, of Goethe. And yet, look what happened in Germany. That's why it's extremely important that we never let ourselves become apathetic, because these groups in the United States, who are in essence the spiritual grandchildren of the Hitlers and the Goebbels and the Streichers, are just waiting for the same conditions in the hope that they can do the same thing here. I personally do believe that it will not happen. One of the reasons it will not happen is because people now realize what can happen. In Germany, people thought Hitler was a clown until it was too late. Now we take these people seriously. They may have crazy ideas, but these are not crazy men. Some of them are very cold, calculating individuals. We certainly do not want to ignore them, because when you have a cancer, you don't ignore it. You go to work on it right away.
The statistics that usually come out, 25 million in all of World War II, break down the statistics for us again. 6 million Jews, how many Slavs? What are we dealing with statistically?
When you get into a war, it's very difficult to pinpoint exact totals. In a war, there are soldiers who shoot and get shot at. There are civilians who are killed incidentally, not purposely per se. A bombing raid meant to hit a ball-bearing plant hit some houses. That happened. My greatest interest is those individuals who were murdered willingly, conscientiously, intentionally, for no other reason than that they were considered unworthy of life. Jews, Gypsies, Serbs, millions of Poles died in the Holocaust, millions of Russian civilians who were totally non-political died in the Holocaust. What I find very interesting and extremely important is the fact that the first people that the Nazis murdered en masse were Germans, primarily children and young adults who had mental illness, who were cripples. Those were the first people that were murdered, some 200,000.
The Aryan race, the view still is held by these groups that they must build a racially pure Reich? Is it the, in all of these splinter groups, do they have a unifying thread as to a coherence in their philosophy and their political views?
There is no doubt that they do. There are, of course, some minor differences. But when you get down to it, the Aryan Nations, the KKK, the National Alliance, and various other groups all have the same thing in mind. And in many cases, members of one group are actually members of the other.
You're listening to KKLA 99.5 FM. The show is Introspective. I am Craig Johnson, and my guest tonight for the next 45 minutes will be Aaron Breitbart from the Simon Wiesenthal Center. He's a senior researcher there. On the half hour, we're going to calls. The number is 818-762-5552. If you have a question for Aaron, please call 818-762-5552, and in 15 minutes, we'll be going to the calls. Now, Aaron, this is, you just don't wipe out a figure like 6 million Jews. I heard a quote from Eichmann where he himself had said to a friend, 100 people dead is a travesty, 5 million people dead is a statistic. Our minds can't grasp that concept. What is the tack of argumentation of these anti-Holocaust people? Are they simply saying it was all propaganda?
You have to understand what these people are really about. Anti-Semitism throughout the ages has been built on one general theme, the Jewish conspiracy theory. Now, this theme has been changed. In the Middle Ages, the Jews were supposedly working for the devil in order to gain control of the world. Later on, it became somewhat more secularized. The Jews were controlling the newspapers, political parties, the banks. At the time of Hitler, the Jews were trying to gain world control by essentially bastardizing the Aryan race until the Aryans were totally mongrelized. Not that there is such a thing as an Aryan. And then later on, the new anti-Semitism had to be changed once again. And that is the fact that the Jews made up the Holocaust so that they could collect money from guilty consciences for Israel, so Israel can conquer the world, and so the Jews can expand and finally achieve world domination. It's the same Jewish conspiracy theory, but you must understand, like Heinz, anti-Semitism comes in 57 different varieties. Now, there's something else that I have to point out. World War II gave anti-Semitism a very bad name. There was a time where it was actually fashionable to be anti-Semitic. A person who was considered anti-Semitic was defined as one who hated Jews more than was absolutely necessary. But the people who were anti-Semites had a big problem with World War II because World War II showed the total ugliness of anti-Semitism.
And these groups went underground, didn't they, at that time?
Well, some of them weren't even in existence. Many of the revisionist groups say that it never occurred, period. And what they want to do is they are essentially pro-Nazi, pro-extreme right-wing, and so what they must do is simply wash the stain of the Holocaust away in order to be able to get people to buy this sort of a view that the Jew is once again engaged in a plot. And according to some of these people, anti-Semitism is a plot that was made up by Jews. In other words, there is no such thing. What's interesting is that all of these anti-Semitic groups generally deny it, especially the revisionists. We are not anti-Semitic, but we hate Israel, we hate Jewish organizations, we hate certain Jewish individuals.
It's a big but.
Well, it's the big canard, of course, is saying, well, I have nothing against Jews, it's just Israel I don't like. If you scratch an anti-Zionist deep enough, you'll find an anti-Semite.
We in the news recently have heard names such as Klaus Barbie, you know, Kurt Waldheim, the issue there, Mengele's body being discovered. It seems that there is a fresh interest still dealing with these issues. Now, you gave me a name earlier, the Andrea Artukovich?
Artukovich.
Artukovich, right in Seal Beach recently. Give us an overview of Barbie and Artukovich and some of these other individuals. Are they small fish?
Well, in the case of Klaus Barbie, in terms of the numbers of people, one could call him small fish only statistically. What was interesting about Barbie is here was a person who was used by American intelligence after the war. We knew who Klaus Barbie was and what he was involved. And when the French wanted him handed over, the United States government said that we don't have him. later on, when the beans were spilled, it became quite clear that we had him and we had, in essence, lied to the French. Barbie was used because of intelligence reasons. He is now in France awaiting trial, which may start at the end of this year, the beginning of next. In the case of Andrea Artukovich, we are talking about a man who was directly and in certain cases indirectly involved in the murders of hundreds of thousands of people, mostly Serbian Christians, for no other reason that they were a Serbian Orthodox Christian belief, as opposed to the official religion that would be tolerated by the Croatian government. That, of course, does not mean that all Croatians were involved in these atrocities. Many of the people who were murdered by Artukovich in the concentration camps set up by Artukovich were indeed dissenting Croatians, including quite a few priests. Artukovich spent some 3.5 decades in the United States fighting extradition. He was finally extradited back to Yugoslavia, where he stood trial, where he was convicted of the murders of individuals. And when you get into numbers, you know, what's the difference if you kill 500 people, 500,000 people, 50,000 people, or one? And he has been given the death sentence. And
he has one more appeal.
He has one more appeal, that is correct, to have already been disallowed. And theoretically, if this appeal is not allowed, he will be executed as per Yugoslavian law. And interestingly enough, there was an American from the consul in Zagreb who was at that trial to make sure there was nothing phony going on, because there would be a certain amount of backlash, obviously, as there is now. There are some people who say, how can you let somebody who's lived in this country be sent back to a communist country for trial? They said it was a political trial. Well, it wasn't a political trial. It was the trial of a former politician for committing murders. And Andrea Artukovich, though 86 years old, or 87 by now, was sent back. And I think his case is very important. He was able to get away with it for some 4 decades. And the point of sending a person like Artukovich, who is essentially half senile, now back to Yugoslavia, is to tell the world, no matter how far you run, no matter how many years pass, if you are a murderer, you will be hunted down and you will be brought before the bar of justice. And in this case, justice was duly served.
Aaron, how do you feel when you have to deal with a lot of these people and these individuals? You've no doubt met people from these extreme groups and so on and so forth. Does it make your skin crawl when you're around them?
It does. One has to have a certain amount of detachment and not let himself get too deeply involved. Sometimes I liken myself to a doctor who handles catastrophic diseases. These doctors are people who see nothing but ugly things in terms of what happens to human beings. And I see something similar to that. Now, these doctors cannot take it home with them, because if they did and if it affected them too greatly, they would be no help to anybody. And I have the same sort of thing. I have to, by the same token, try to detach myself from it and think a little bit more with my head than with my heart. It's not always easy, because my father, may he rest in peace, just managed to survive. He left Austria in 1938, right after the Anschluss, along with his uncle, who had actually served in the Austrian army in World War I.
When we're dealing with Mengele, the names that people are so familiar with, so many questions come up. Was that the body of Mengele? Are you satisfied?
They say there's a 99.9% certainty that that was Mengele's body, because forensically you can never be 100% sure. However, in our minds, there is no doubt that that was the body of Mengele. There are those in certain survivor organizations who dispute that, but they're doing that, I feel, because they feel that they have been robbed. He was a person whom it seemed we were getting closer to all the time, who was going to be brought before the world to answer for his crimes, and then people were robbed. He had been proven to have died years before. But it is our belief that he is dead. Naturally, we never close our books on anything. We get letters to this very day with tips, and believe it or not, we don't throw them in the garbage can. We check them out as best as we can.
You're listening to Introspective on 99.5 FM. We're going to the phone calls in 10 minutes. The number is 818-762-KKLA. 818-762-5552. Any questions for Aaron Breitbart? We're going to Breitbart. That's the German. How do you say that in a good German accent?
Breitbart. This
that was close.
Yes, excellent.
Any questions on Nazi war criminals, the Holocaust? Get your calls in now so we can get you in order. Aaron, go back just for a minute. I've always had a question about Martin Bormann. What do we know historically about Bormann after the bunker?
It's an interesting story. His family claims that he died shortly after the war. They showed the so-called grave of Bormann to West German authorities in the Bundesrepublik, and they conducted tests, and they were found to be inconclusive. Bormann would have to be somewhere around 86 years old if he were still alive today. So on that basis, we assume that he is dead. He might have died many, many years before. We don't know. There are others, of
course.
Conflicting
testimony.
Yes, there are others who say that he may have gotten to South America and with his hope of starting a Fourth Reich. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. We don't know for
Movies
sure.
Movies like The Boys from Brazil and different things like this always tickle people's ears and eyes with reference to these subjects. Who is the outstanding criminal right now that is probably enjoins more interest than anyone else?
That would be somebody who is alive, somebody who was heavily involved in atrocities and whose general whereabouts we know. That is Alois Brunner, who now lives in Damascus, Syria, as the guest of the Syrian government. It was quite interesting. He went into Syria under the alias Georg Fischer. What happened was he was involved apparently in drug trafficking. He was arrested by the Syrians, who threw him in jail. At that point, he told whom he really was, and the Syrians basically took him out of jail, and actually he worked for the Syrian government himself. The Syrians are not about to honor any extradition requests, although several have been made. It has absolutely nothing to do with Israel per se, because it's France, it was Germany wants him as well. There are several countries in which Brunner was involved, but we're talking about a person who, as deputy for Adolf Eichmann, was involved in perhaps 125 to 150,000 deportations. He has received letter bombs. He's had an eye blown out, the hand blown off. I'm not exactly sure who has done these things. I would like to say it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, but the fact of the matter is, what our interest is having these people taken into legal detention, brought before the world so that the world can see that man can actually sink into the depths of depravity and inhumanity.
One important question, going back to right after the war, Odessa and various other organizations. How did the top Nazi fish get out and really, you really, compared to the Eichmanns and the big names that have been caught, just a drop in the bucket to the individuals that were involved in the hierarchy of the Reich. Where did they go?
Some found refuge in some Arab lands. Some went to South America, and South America is probably the continent where the greatest majority went. They went all over the world. Some of them wound up in the United States, although those in the United States were primarily collaborators with the Nazis, as opposed to the actual German Nazis themselves. They went all over. South America was one of their greatest haunts. They found refuge there.
What is Odessa? Where does the money come from? How do these organizations work?
Well, it's the organization of the SS Angehörigen. Odessa is an acronym. Basically, it was Franz Röstl who wanted to see to it that there would be a Fourth Reich one day. He figured, and as well as others, that Germany would arise and that these people would only have to be on the run for a while. Tremendous amounts of money were collected, many of them by big industrialists, so that there was no question of money. They were able to get these people with their connections simply out of the country. In many cases, they were caught. Now, one of the leaders of the organizations, and there were several like the Spinner, the Spider, and the Kameradenwerk, as well as Odessa, was a man named Skorzeny. Skorzeny was a very special man to Adolf Hitler. He was not only an SS man, but he was the one whom Hitler sent to save Mussolini, and he was able actually to get Mussolini. He was involved in certain other operations. That is the one he is most commonly known for. He is sort of the antithesis of Simon Wiesenthal, and they had a certain professional respect for each other. Wiesenthal's job was to get these people into court And Skorzeny's job was to get these people out of the country. They had a certain respect for each other and at the same time a tremendous disgust for each other. But Skorzeny and others were able to get them out. Some of them, as a matter of fact, may have even gone to work for the Russians. I think it was Bob Hope who told the joke that Khrushchev was telling Eisenhower. He said that our German scientists are better than your German scientists. So the fact of the matter is there is a lot of culpability in this. The Russians, prima facie at first glance, were of course very anti-Nazi, but when the Russians had a use for someone, they would take them also, and that's what many people thought happened to Heinrich Müller, who was the Gestapo chief under Hitler.
We're going to go to the phone calls now. Get your calls in now. If you want to talk to Aaron Breitbart about Nazi war criminals or the Holocaust, the number is 818-762-KKLA, 818-762-5552. And we have our first call tonight. We have Rose from Eagle Rock. Rose, you're on the air. What's your question for Aaron? Hello? Turn your radio down, would you? Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Turn your radio down, all right?
Did it. Okay. I want to know who Malaxa was and if it's true that President Nixon pardoned him. I'm going to hang up so I can hear.
Thank you.
I would like to refer you to a book called Wanted, The Search for Nazis in America, in which a chapter is devoted to a Romanian fascist named Valerian Trifa, who has since been booted out of the country and now resides in Portugal. There was a Nazi organization, a fascist organization active in Romania called the Iron Guard. If you take a look in the book, you will get a little bit more information about Iron Guardists and people who were supposedly involved with the Iron Guard. And I think after you read that, you'll get a better idea of what the Mille Lacs situation was.
Aaron, I want to ask you, you mentioned books. You mentioned the Simon Wiesenthal book, The Murderers Among Us. What other source material could our listeners go to if they want to study on this subject?
You know, there's so many books that have been written about it. The Murderers Among Us is a very good book.
That's Wiesenthal, isn't it?
That was done by Simon Wiesenthal. It was actually his memoirs, edited in 1967 by Joseph Wexberg. It's not an easy book to get because it's out of print, but most good libraries should have it. Wherever they may be, by the Klarsfelds or something else that somebody might want to look into. There are quite a few books that have been written about it. There's one that's been written about Mengele. There is just so much material that it's very hard to do the topic justice, you know, in just the few minutes we have. But if there is somebody who is interested, they can write away to us.
What's your address?
We're at 9760 West Pico Boulevard, PICO in L.A., 90035. I'm in charge of the research department, and we will try to answer questions and in any case be able to send you out a bibliography for further reading.
We've got another call. John from Lakewood. You're on the air. What's your question for Aaron Breitbart? John, you're on the air. Ah, we don't have John. We've got a stretch, he says. That's Bill DeFoy's way of getting us to stretch the conversation. Now, you mentioned to me earlier that the Simon Wiesenthal Center is really open to tours. What do you have educationally there for the community?
Besides the library, we pride ourselves on an extremely important program, our outreach program. Its purpose is to educate the public at large. We stress mostly students, high school and colleges, in conjunction with human rights courses, which they are taking, or historical courses. We invite these people into the museum where a docent gives them a tour. And most important, afterwards, they actually sit down and hear the story as told by someone who actually suffered through the hell of an Auschwitz or of some of the other camps. And when these students come in, some of them with more background, some with less, but when they leave, they're just not the same.
That is life-changing. A survivor is always there to give first-hand testimony.
First-hand testimony is extremely important. As you mentioned before, when you hear a statistic, it's a statistic. It doesn't really bring it home. Incidentally, that's why the diary of Anne Frank is so important.
Yes.
Because here is a real, live person telling her story. And interestingly enough, all the revisionists try to go after Anne Frank saying the diary was a fake because of that very reason. mind, but I just don't understand 6 million. It's like a person who understands. I know what $1.95 is, but I don't understand what $50 million is.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. When you bring it down to the personal level, it means an awful lot.
We've got another call. We've got John, I think, finally from Lakewood. John, you're on the air. What's your question for Aaron Breitbart?
There's a book entitled The International Jew, written by Henry Ford. And my understanding that it had an effect on Hitler in his early thinking, and nothing ever seems to have been mentioned in this, in any of the discussions.
The International Jew was one of many anti-Semitic works. Henry Ford was not considered a friend of the Jews. Incidentally, that International Jew is still being published and spread by various hate groups, as well as other materials. I do not know to what extent the International Jew actually had an impact on Adolf Hitler. I don't think Adolf Hitler would have acted any differently if he did not know of the International Jew. Some people go back to Hitler's early reading of the Ostara Viennese paper. But the fact of the matter is there was so much hate out there anyway that if one or two books would have been missing, I don't think it would have changed Hitler's views at all.
Thank you, John, for your call. Hitler was a voice, was he not, voicing a lot of hatred that was fermenting in the atmosphere?
I believe Adolf Hitler was the embodiment, essentially, of all evil. In Christian terms, and I'm not a Christian, but many people that I have spoken to consider him the Antichrist. And when you hear that right away, whether you're Christian or not, you know what it means. Adolf Hitler is, you know, number 666 incarnate, as evil as you can get. This was a person, however, who was not the only hater. It was one who took advantage of a situation of the crisis in Germany. And Germany was in terrible trouble after the war and was able to rouse up the people. And that is what demagogues do. They take advantage of a situation. The modern haters of today are waiting for a big economic crunch, because when everybody is eating, when everybody has a car, chicken in a pot, what have you, nobody wants to rock the boat. But when there is trouble, our natural instinct is not to blame ourselves, but to look elsewhere. Let's see who else could have stabbed us in the back. And interestingly enough, where are the haters working today? Primarily in the farm belt, because the farmers are undergoing terrible difficulties right now. They're losing their farms. They're being foreclosed upon. And so these hate groups target this area. Oh, yes, saying that you are really the true chosen of Israel. The Jews are really satanic. They own the banks. The banks are foreclosing on you. Most farmers don't believe this. However, there is a significant number of those who do, and they do because they have lost everything. Here are people that are giving them some sort of hope. That is what Hitler did. It was a hope predicated on evil, on scapegoatism. That's not what America is about or what any country should be about, but that's what the haters are looking for.
Next call. We've got Fritz on the air. What's your question for Aaron Breitbart?
Yeah, I had this question asking why never the Russians, who did the same crimes as the German Nazis, why they never have been tried?
The answer to that is very simple. I agree with you. In my view, communism, especially as practiced by the Russians, is nothing more than the mirror image of Nazism. Some of the greatest crimes were committed by the Russian communists. Joseph Stalin was an ugly human being as far as his views toward people. The basic reason, let's face it, that these people were not tried is because they were not the losers. It's the losers who get tried. The winners don't. And unfortunately, in war, as you know, atrocities are generally committed by all sides, but it's the losers of the war who get tried. I don't know if that's altogether fair, but those people that are prosecuted for war crimes should be prosecuted. And as far as other people are concerned, even if they're on the winning side, it is my view that if they do commit atrocities, they should be brought to the bar of justice as well. And it was an excellent question.
Thank you so much, Fritz. You're listening to KKLA 99.5 FM. The show is Introspective. I'm Craig Johnson. My guest for the next 25 minutes is Aaron Breitbart, senior researcher from the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, California. We're going to go to our next call. We've got John from Los Angeles. What's your question for Aaron Breitbart?
Of the splinter groups, how conspicuous or inconspicuous are they? And are they so inconspicuous that they might, as the prophecy claims, that, you know, because they're a political power, that they might be the source from which the Antichrist arises?
Thank you for your question.
Well, they try to be as conspicuous as possible, because what they crave more than anything else right now is being known, is the publicity. There are many people who therefore say, let's ignore these people because they what they want is to get the publicity. I do not believe that they can be ignored. As far as the Christian view in terms of the Antichrist, etc., I must admit that I am not expert enough in that, and that question should actually be referred to someone who is.
Thank you so much for your call. We've got another call. Michael from Malibu, you're on the air with Aaron Breitbart. What's your question? Well, we don't have Michael yet. We'll have him in a few seconds. Do you run into a high rate of anti-Semitism in so-called Christian groups, right-wing groups that use the name of Christ, but they're peddling some form of anti-Semitism? How prevalent is that?
Well, you have groups, for example, such as the various Aryan groups that are extremely anti-Semitic, and they use the term church, they use the term Christ, and, of course, mainstream Christianity believes that these people are nothing but an abomination in the terms of their activities. But they use the term church for several reasons. One, for the unsuspecting person who hears the word church, he feels, well, here is a religious group, and religions stand for very decent things, regardless of what they are. Perhaps they also want to use the term church to get certain tax advantages. I can't be sure. But they are fairly conspicuous. The most famous one is the Aryan Nations in Hayden Lake, Idaho, not far from Coeur d'Alene. Churchmen from all over the country have denounced them. They are people who are allied with the KKK, the various other organizations. One of their organizations, a daughter organization, was called the Order, or the White American Bastion, or the British Weigand, the Silent Brotherhood. These were people who were actually sent to jail, some two dozen of them, for crimes ranging from counterfeit to forgery to fraud to murder. They're an insult to the name of religion, organized or not, but these people are organized, and there may be as many as 6,000 people who are members of some sort.
Excellent. Michael from Malibu, you're on the air now. Michael, what's your question for Aaron Breitbart?
Yes. Do we know actually how many people in Hitler's regime, in his inner circle, knew about actually what was going on, the innocent people being murdered and so forth?
In terms of numbers, I just can't give you a number, you know, on one foot, as they say. Those people who were in Hitler's inner circle knew what was going on because they were the ones who were in charge, essentially, of carrying it out. There are many people who say that, you know, certain people knew and certain didn't. That's true. It's hard to say exactly who knew and who didn't. The great majority of them, however, did know, and they were supportive of it, not only against the Jews, but against other peoples as well.
It's time to thank you for your call, Michael. Get your calls in now. The number is 818-762-5552. We'll be here for the next 22 minutes with Aaron Breitbart, my guest, senior researcher from the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, California. That's 818-762-5552. Aaron, I want to ask you, just follow up on that question a little bit. Reading the works of Albert Speer, really a right man of Hitler, his Minister of Armaments, and so on and so forth, inside the Third Reich. He just died in 81. He really claims an ignorance and claims that for the first time at the Nuremberg trials, he saw the footage and the films and was one of Hitler's intimates, however not privy to certain information. I want to know if the organization has ever dealt with Speer before he died. And also, number two, give us an overview as to right from Adolf Hitler through Himmler and Eichmann, who was responsible for the final solution?
It's very hard to know exactly what one person knew, because what one person knows is in his mind. Speer knew. The question is, how much did he know? And of that, you know, one can argue left and right, and we shouldn't spend a whole lot of time on that. In terms of the final solution, we have Adolf Hitler at the very top. Oh, interestingly enough, one so-called revisionist historian, a man named David Irving, said that Hitler didn't know about the Holocaust. He said there was a Holocaust, but Hitler didn't know anything about it. It was carried out totally by his subordinates. We do know that among his subordinates, we had people like the SS Reichsführer, Heinrich Himmler, who was the chief of the SS, people like Reinhard Heydrich, very often, you know, known as the hangman. Interestingly enough, many of Heydrich's enemies within the party and the SS try to prove that he was actually of Jewish stock. And interestingly enough, he's the only one that looked purely Aryan, if there is such a thing. There were quite a few that were involved. Some who were involved in the murders of thousands of people, are less known. You have a man named Rudolf Höss, not Hess, the one who's in Spandau, but the commandant of Auschwitz, who actually wrote an autobiography where he admitted what happened, did happen, and of course, after that, he was hanged. Many people did know, most of them.
We've got another call. We've got Colin from Redondo Beach. What's your question for Aaron Breitbart?
Oh, good evening. I'm just wondering, was Hitler involved in any Satan worship or any cult worship of any kind? If he was, would you have a reference for me?
You know, we had just discussed that before we went on the air.
Yeah.
Hitler was very steeped in occultism. Some people say that it was occultism that was the cause of World War II and the Holocaust. I can't go that far.
We will be doing a program in 3 weeks dealing just with the sound historical documentation of some of his beliefs without getting too far into the mist.
There are, incidentally, all kinds of stories, some which apparently are somewhat true, including the fact that Hitler had 300 Tibetan lamas, monks, to tell him what he should do. There's stories that Hitler was really not of this earth, that he was of Atlantis. There is no doubt that you're dealing with a person who is very much into the occult, very much into astrology. To what extent that guided him in his hatred and his activities is a question, of course, of debate, but he was definitely involved in it. Many books have been written, The Occult Messiah, Spear of Destiny, there are quite a few.
I want to ask you, thank you for your call, by the way. I want to ask you about Rudolf Hess in Spandau. He, I understand, is the only prisoner there, and he's in his 90s. And how is he doing?
Well, any prisoner in his 90s can't be doing terribly well. Let's put it that way.
Thank you, Aaron. I walked right into that. I apologize.
There has been, however, some movement to have him released from Spandau on humanitarian grounds and handed back to his family. We'll take care of him. In his last years, some of these Nazis have a habit of living a long time. You know, it's God doesn't really want him; he'd rather have him here. He doesn't want to have to take care of him.
You heard it here, folks.
Right. The fact is that the British, the French, and the Americans are actually willing to let him be released to his family on humanitarian grounds. Not that Hess deserves it, but strictly as a humanitarian gesture. And the Russians at this point, who also administer the Spandau prison, are opposed to it because they feel it would be an exoneration of Nazism.
Thank you so much. Our next call, Michael. We've got a lot of Michaels tonight. Michael from Garner Valley, what's your question?
Yes, I have a question for Aaron.
Yes, go ahead.
First of all, I'd like to say that I appreciate the work of the Simon Wiesenthal Foundation. But my question is, how is it that certain individuals were brought to trial during the Nuremberg trials and such, and a company such as IG Farben, who knowingly participated in these things and worked right along with the Nazi government, was never brought to trial, and as a matter of fact, is still in business? I'll take that on the air.
It's an interesting question, why that happened. I personally think, to a large extent, it was based on real political realities. I think the United States realized that a reconstructed Germany was in its greatest interest as the first line of defense against the Russians. Therefore, it was extremely important that the economy be built up as soon as possible. And if one were to arrest all the managers of these companies, which did use concentration camp labor and which many people died as a result of the poor conditions, what would have happened is that this reconstruction of Germany would not have been realized, and it is my belief that the United States and Britain and France felt that the war is over, the Nazis are no longer a threat, we need a strong Germany, and as a matter of fact, let's face it, former President Nixon himself said that without Germany, you have no NATO, there's nothing. And I believe that that might have actually had something to do with it, but it is a valid question.
Thank you so much for your call. I want to ask you about Kurt Waldheim. This is recent news. What is your opinion on his election to the presidency?
It is my opinion that Kurt Waldheim, given his record, given the fact that he misrepresented himself to the public, both the Austrian and world public for so many years, should not have run for the presidency of a country which at least, you know, has a facade, if nothing more, of being neutral, very pro-Western, and a bastion of democratic ideals. Whether or not it can be absolutely proven that Kurt Waldheim was, by strict definition, a war criminal is another story. He was certainly an accessory. Such a person who has lied and changed his story time and time again when confronted with the facts, is nothing more than an opportunist and a very bad liar. He might have been a lot smarter if he would have come clean at the very beginning and said, yes, I know about it, it was wrong, I was young, and the reason that I am now running is to see to it that this never again happens.
Come right out.
He did not say that, and that was his biggest mistake.
Our next call is from Los Angeles. You're on the air. What's your question for Aaron Breitbart?
I would like to ask about what percentage of the people who were killed were black and from other ethnic groups.
Thank you for your question.
Adolf Hitler's greatest hate was toward Jews. His next greatest hate was toward blacks. The reason that there were not that many blacks murdered by the Nazis as far as a genocidal program was concerned was simply because there weren't that many blacks living in Europe. There are stories of blacks sent to concentration camps. I unfortunately do not have numbers. Somebody has called into the center asking for some information on it. We're getting somewhat involved. The fact of the matter is blacks and Jews and Slavs and Poles and gypsies were considered useless mouths, untermenschen, subhumans, and if Hitler had his way and he would have conquered the United States, the Jewish totals in terms of those murdered would have been eclipsed only by those who Hitler had killed, blacks. And that's why I consider it such a terrible insult to the black community when a person who fancies himself as a black leader, one Louis Farrakhan, comes out and says Hitler was a very great man, because if he knew what Hitler really stood for, he would have been very much ashamed of himself.
Thank you so much for your call. You know, it's true, the statistics, people forget that the Final Solution dealt with undesirables and people that could mess up the Aryan bloodstock, which was everyone from the euthanasia cases, older people, crippled people, retarded people. That 6 million Jews concept is always what is highlighted, but many people aren't aware that there were millions and millions more who fell into the same category.
Oh, there is no doubt about it. The Jews were different in one respect from all the others who had suffered. They were the only people who were singled out in total
as a scapegoat, yeah,
to be murdered. There were other peoples who were murdered. Gypsies, certain gypsy groups were actually supposed to be kept alive for their reputed powers of telling the future, getting back to occultism. But the Jew was the only one singled out for total destruction. That was Hitler's goal. That was his plan. It did not happen. But many other people suffered. That's the point of the Holocaust. It was not a Jewish question. It's a question of humanity in general. By the way, there is a booklet called The Other Holocaust by a man named Bohdan Witwicki, who is not Jewish, and he details the sufferings that that other people, such as Poles and Ukrainians and others, suffered at the hands of these murderers. And that's what Nazis are, baby killers.
You're listening to Introspective on KKLA 99.5, and for the next 11 minutes, we'll be here with our guest, Aaron Breitbart, senior researcher of the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles. I'll tell you what, why don't you get your calls in now? We've got just 10 more minutes. 818-762-5552 is the number, 818-762-KKLA. I want to ask you right now a question about the British. In Simon Wiesenthal's book, The Murderers Among Us, he pointed out his frustration in the lack of interest on part of the British in their... they would not help at all in bringing some of these individuals to justice. They weren't interested.
In many cases, that happens to be true. Very often, the British, whether rightfully or unrightfully, have been called the Knights of the Double Cross. We do know for a fact that they closed down what was then Palestine to Jewish immigration during the war. They could have saved many, many hundreds of thousands of Jews. However, they chose not to offend the Arabs, and they were very well paid for that, because by and large the Arabs, such as the Palestinian under Mufti Haji Amin al-Husseini, supported the Nazi cause. He sat out World War II as a guest of the Fuhrer in Berlin. There were all kinds of different groups with all kinds of interests. The British wanted certain people for what they could give them. British intelligence, of course, is always considered one of the most famous. The Americans, the Russians, the French, we all did the same sort of thing. Now, it's very hard in certain cases to blame them, because one can say, well, there are now much more realpolitik relevant matters that we have to handle, essentially the Soviet Union. But in many cases, the work of Simon Wiesenthal, and not only that, but government workers, who were supposed to do this kind of job was actually hindered by others. I want to tell you a very short story. It's about a young Italian-American named Tony DeVito, not to be confused with the man who plays Louis. This Tony DeVito was an American soldier who, at the end of the war, walked through one of the Nazi concentration camps. It was then he decided that his life's goal would be to get these people. And he worked for immigration in the United States, going after these people who had managed to get in. And he found that in so many cases, files were taken away just when he was about to get to them. And so much was put in his way. It seemed as though one hand was working against the other. That is a shame. I think the fact that the United States established an OSI some 7-8 years ago was to the glory of the United States. The fact that all of this is coming out is to the glory of the United States, because we can criticize ourselves, and that takes great moral magnitude.
We've got another call. Jan from West Los Angeles, you're on the air. What's your question?
Yes, basically I have a two-part question. First off, what is the normal foot soldier or of the Nazi Party basically really know of the overall killing of the Jews and the whole basic outlook? And the second part of my question is what did the so-called the American POWs of the Nazi Party, the German Party, during the war itself, what type of things did they go through, if you have any information on that?
Thank you for your question, Jan.
Thank you.
Okay, as far as the American POWs were concerned, and I'm going backwards, they were more or less treated according to the Geneva Convention, which the Germans kept essentially because we had a lot of their prisoners as well. However, American POWs went through hell. Being a prisoner of war for anybody is absolute hell. And the Americans were treated very, very poorly, but it was not to the same extent as being in a Konzentrationslager, in a concentration camp. I'm going to have to get to that first question as soon as I remember. Could you refresh me once again, please?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
He's gone now. He's gone. He asked about the average foot soldier knowing about the Holocaust.
That's an important question. It all depends where that foot soldier was located, which service he was involved with. It's true that the SS and the Sicherheitsdienst were those responsible for the actual implementation of the killing. However, many Wehrmacht soldiers were actually involved. Many of them took pictures of it. One General Werler of the 11th Army had to make a command that all pictures taken had to be turned over. This was made in late 41, early 42. So we do know that many of them did have knowledge. Those who were stationed in countries where this did not happen may not have had the same amount of knowledge. It's very difficult to say who knew what. Those stationed in Eastern Europe, where the greatest atrocities were committed, they knew. They had to know.
Mr. Wiesenthal himself mentions, even among the SS, righteous and upright men that he met that helped him so often to escape and to get into different positive situations. So he said it was not a slap to the whole German race, as though all Germans are Nazis.
You see, the fact of the matter is not all Germans are Nazis, and not all Nazis were Germans. The first people that were murdered en masse by the Nazis were Germans. It would be morally outrageous for me to blame every German for what happened. There were many Germans who risked and gave their lives in the fight against Hitler. There were others who didn't like what happened but sat on the side. The fact of the matter is, though, that it would be wrong to put the finger on any one group and say all of you. Collective guilt is something that is a moral outrage to me.
We have another call. Tom from Manhattan Beach. Tom, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hello. you may have been asked this already tonight. Apparently there's a mountain of evidence that links today's so-called New Age movement with its origins, with the same origins which gave rise to Nazism. I was wondering what if the center has its eye on the New Age movement today and how concerned you are with it.
I can't believe you asked the question. Tell them why.
Da-da-da. Aaron and I were talking about this just before we went on the air. Go ahead, answer that. Thanks for the call, by the way.
Without naming names, somebody who is an expert on the New Age movement recently came to see me with a whole bunch of books, including one that she had written herself. That's the only hint I'll give you. It's a woman who came to see me. And I was not very much involved in the New Age movement in terms of what connections they had. And she started talking to me, and as I started reading these sources, I got very scared. I don't believe that the New Age movement is Nazism. However, it seems from some of the reading that I have done as though Nazism and the New Age movement borrowed the same ideas from other sources, starting with a theosophist, I almost couldn't get that out, named Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who was very steeped in the occult. And I am currently looking into that. There are other books that I have to read. I'm currently now in the works of one Alice Bailey, whose works are very anti-Semitic, and whom, from what I understand, was one of the mothers of the New Age movement. But I'm glad you brought it up, because that seems to be extremely topical at this point.
Yeah, and it's a confirmation to continue with the study. We've got another call. We've got Sarah from Encino. What's your question?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hi. My family... homesteaded in the Midwest, and I was wondering if the foundation is doing any work in the neo-Nazism and anti-Semitism that's going in the Midwest farm communities.
Thank you, sir.
We're looking at that extremely carefully. We do have quite a few files. We did mention that a little bit earlier because the same conditions that created a Hitler or Hitler's ability to get into power to a smaller extent seem to be manifesting themselves in the Midwest and in the farm belt in general. The idea of the poverty, the foreclosures. By the way, in 1928, there was a small revolution in Schleswig-Holstein in northern Germany because there were farms that were being foreclosed upon. So this is something we look at quite carefully. Our files are voluminous on them. There are other sources of information which I cannot go into at this point for various reasons, but please be advised that we know what they're up to.
Thank you so much for the call. We've just got a few minutes left, Aaron. First of all, it's been a pleasure having you as a guest. You're used to Ray Bream and Larry King, for heaven's sakes, and you would humble yourself to come on this network. Thank you. But my last question really has to do with extremism. You seem to be very balanced in your views. You seem to be not radical in the sense of some people. Do you have extremists that are in your line of work that bother you?
We get calls and letters from people who hear a German-sounding name, and right away they want us to look up just on the basis of the fact that the person is ethnic German. You know, for God's sakes, that's no crime. I mean, but there are people who say, this guy has a funny accent. Could he have been a Nazi?
Colleagues. I'm talking colleagues now, researchers.
There are people that tend to be, as in all groups, some that are a little more extremist in the sense of, you know, go after harder, check this particular lead out. In the case, for example, of Mengele, it is our belief that Mengele is dead based on the evidence that has been handed to us. There are other groups that say, no, Mengele is not dead. You're committing a crime to justice by saying that he is. You should still go after him. There are groups like that. One has to take a look at this very carefully. It is my view that as emotional as the issue is, one has to think with their head and not their hearts, although it's not always easy to divorce the two.
Thank you so much, Aaron. My guest has been Aaron Breitbart from Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, senior researcher. And if you'd like to write to Aaron, if you have any questions, just write to the Simon Wiesenthal Center, 9760 West Pico Boulevard, West Los Angeles, 90035. Is there a phone number?
Yes, our number is 553-9036. That's area code 213.
Jim Hodson, welcome back.
Welcome, yes. By the way, if you'd like to visit the Holocaust Center in Israel, you'll be leading a tour to Israel next spring, so you can call or write for information. The address is Introspective, Box 6555, Malibu, California, 90264. And if you'd like information on the services at Bethel, of which Craig is the pastor, at Fine Bible Teaching, services Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, give Betty a call, 213-457-3741. We'd love to have you.
Thank you so much. And until next week... this is Jim Hodson and Craig Johnson and Aaron Breitbart saying goodbye.
Thank you for joining us this week for Introspective. For a list of previously taped programs and for all correspondence, please address your letters to Introspective, Bethel Christian Fellowship, Post Office Box 6555, Malibu, California, 90264-6555. And please join us next week for another interesting and informative hour. This program is produced by Bethel Christian Fellowship of Santa Monica, California, and is made possible by Wogan Chiropractic Offices in Encino, California, and the Friends of Introspective in this area.
Empire of the senses, you're the queen of all you survey. All the cities are...
Sharing the word throughout your day on KKLA.
Friends of Introspective.